Welcome to the History Podcast, guys. This is your host, Jason Thomason. Let's get started. Welcome to the podcast, guys. I am so excited about our topic today. If you know me, you know that this is arguably one of my favorite topics in American history. And that is the topic of the 26th President of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt. And as I was preparing to get ready for this episode, the biggest challenge for me was trying to dwindle down the amount of information that I want to share, because there's so many great stories to tell about Teddy Roosevelt. For better or worse, he changes the office of the presidency. He is going to take over the office in 1901 after the assassination of President McKinley. And we're going to get to that here in just a little bit. But in order for us to really understand Teddy Roosevelt, we need to kind of go back to his childhood, because I really believe that his childhood tells us a lot. I think our childhoods in general tell us a lot about us, about who we become, the adversities that we face. And Teddy is no different. Teddy, as a young boy in the early 1860s, was diagnosed with asthma. And back then, obviously, asthma was less treatable than it is today. And so Teddy was pretty much stuck indoors all day, every day. And if you have children, as I do, you know that that is going to drive them nuts. And he had a father that was very hard on him. He adored his father, but his father was very hard on him, made no excuses for his son, and forced his son to figure things out when it came to dealing with the physical element of asthma and the other physical ailments that kind of came about because of that that symptom. As he got older, you know, he started to try and grow out of that phase of his life, which was very difficult because, you know, he had doctors that told him, you know, you're probably not going to live very long into adulthood. That's how unsure doctors were about asthma back then. And Teddy was just determined, because he was a kid with so much pent up energy. In modern day, he would probably be diagnosed with ADHD, because he was never able to sit still. Once he finally figured out a physical routine that was rigorous enough and safe enough at the same time, you started to see his body transform. His physical ailments became harder to see. And over time, he moved from just a simple physical routine to get his body stronger to where he became an amateur boxer. And Teddy loved boxing. He also loved football. And we don't have time to talk about his tie with football and its rules, but I would highly encourage you, if you love football and you love Teddy Roosevelt and you love U.S. history, look up that connection, because I think you'll enjoy those tidbits of information. When we look at Teddy's family, Teddy never wanted for anything financially. He grew up in a very wealthy family. The Roosevelts were extremely wealthy. They were always hosting expensive dinners where all their rich friends would get together, and Teddy was always around that. Teddy will end up eventually going to Harvard. He will graduate from Harvard and takes great pride in that Harvard education, as he should. And one thing about Teddy is, he's one of the first presidents really to embrace, his Harvard education. I think sometimes in politics, presidents are afraid of how that will be perceived by the working class American, especially during this period of time where many Americans had no more than an eighth grade education. And if they had more than that, they could not afford to go to college. And so a lot of politicians might shy away from that Harvard education and try to use vernacular that wouldn't make themselves sound as smart as they really were. Teddy didn't shy away from that. In fact, he embraced his education. He embraced his high intelligence. And I think that when you look at the previous 25 presidents, he's really the first to kind of embrace that. As President of the United States. The turning point in Teddy's childhood, though, I think if you wanted to pinpoint one moment where his decision-making in office was really formed as a child, was during the American Civil War. He was a really young boy at the time, but he was old enough to remember that his father was so wealthy that he bought his own way out of the war so that he didn't go have to go fight. They called it buying a substitute. And Teddy's father was wealthy enough to buy himself a substitute soldier, a substitute stand-in. Teddy always felt like his father let him down, and more importantly, that he let his country down. Whether that's fair or not, that is how Teddy felt. Teddy felt that it was his father's obligation as a citizen of the United States. And looking back on that in later years, Teddy always felt like his father did not fulfill his duties as an American citizen. And I think when you look at him as a young adult and you look at him as a professional, a politician, you can see how that affected him in more ways than we probably give it credit for. As Teddy moved into adulthood, he is, after he graduates from Harvard, he'll go to law school as well at Columbia. And eventually, Teddy's going to work his way into politics. And what better way to get started in politics than to get started in your home state of New York? And he is going to work his way up the political ladder through the Republican Party. Now, here's the problem for Teddy. And Teddy is not a yes man. And we are living in an era where, this is during the Gilded Age, where you have a lot of party bosses who control everything, both at the state level and even at the federal level. Teddy doesn't take orders really well. And this upsets a lot of party bosses. But it's amazing the effect that Teddy has with the constituents. It's almost like he's got a bulletproof vest on with these party bosses, because no matter how hard they tried to get rid of him, he just keeps rising up the ladder. There is a problem, though. In 1884, I'm getting my dates mixed up. In 1884, Teddy is going to have a moment in time where he's going to question a lot of things that are going on. His wife, Alice, is giving birth, and I believe it was to their second or third child at the time. And it was their first daughter, Alice, aptly named after her mother. And on February 14th, 1884, they deliver their child. And it was a very painful delivery, as all, you know, deliveries are. But this was especially bad. And the doctors were very concerned that Alice might not make it. What we find out later is Alice had a kidney disease. And the delivery worsened her kidney disease. On top of that, the family had picked up typhoid fever. Teddy's mom had picked it up. And so not only was Teddy's mom, who is kind of the house caretaker at this time, not only is she deathly ill in bed, but his wife Alice is deathly ill just after giving birth to their daughter Alice. And needless to say, on that day, February 14th, 1884, both Theodore Roosevelt's mom and wife will die. Now, Teddy is one who loves to write. He journals every day. And you can look that stuff up. It's pretty awesome to read. He is so smart. I mean, we would probably consider him borderline genius by today's standards. I mean, he is so smart. His vocabulary is so extensive. But on that day, February 14th, 1884, there is simply an X. Teddy's going to go into a really dark place, as we would expect. And he's going to step away from politics, and he's going to go move off. He's going to get as far away as he possibly can, and he's going to go live in the Dakotas. And he'll work as essentially a cowboy, a rancher. And he's going to spend 2 years there, away from everything. He's going to basically what we would call hit the reset button. Never expecting to return to politics, he got away. Now, he left his family behind. He left all of his, you know, his brothers and sisters. He left his newborn behind, left her with his sister Bammy. And he spent 2 years in the Dakotas. And it was during that time that Teddy really starts to become very fond of the outdoors. And he was always an outdoorsman because of his early years as a child, never being able to go outdoors. And so once he was able to go outdoors, he always enjoyed riding horses and things of that nature. But once he gets out into the Dakotas, we see a man that embraces everything that is the outdoors. He loves the wildlife. He loves to hunt. And he learns a lot about himself out there. But 2 years later, in 1886, he's going to come back to New York and return to the political game. And this just shows you how infectious Teddy Roosevelt is. I mean, it's almost like he never even left. But when he comes back, the party bosses, I just see the party bosses in the Republican Party just rolling their eyes like, here we go again with this guy. And they are trying everything they can publicly to promote him because he's within the party, but privately trying to ruin him because they do not like a guy who will not answer to them. But again, what we see starting in 1886 is this rise. Now, he will lose early on as a mayoral candidate in New York City. But after that, he just picks up where he left off and goes. And it's pretty awesome to see. I mean, he will first start as the civil service commissioner there in New York, which civil service needs to be cleaned up. We've already talked about in the Gilded Age episodes about the Pendleton Civil Service Act. So there is a need for commissioners like this to enforce the law that is on the books. And if there's one thing that you need to know about Teddy, is Teddy loves to enforce laws. And that's just something he embraces. He kind of likes that heroic mindset of going after bad guys. He sees the world in very black and white terms, good versus evil. There's not a whole lot of gray for Teddy. So that was a good position for him to start. But he doesn't last long very there, because he's going to rise up to the next spot in his political climb, and that is as police commissioner. And for those of you that understand law enforcement in the late 1800s, it was very corrupt. A lot of bribes going on under the table, especially in New York City. And he was brought in to clean it up, and he did just that. He made a lot of enemies on the way, but he cleaned up New York City as police commissioner, finally earning him a spot in the William McKinley administration in Washington, D.C., as Assistant U.S. Navy Secretary, a job that Teddy loved, he coveted. He loves war, and this is something that we will see more and more. It's a recurring theme with Teddy. He had a fascination with war. He saw war as romantic, and I think a lot of that goes back to what we talked about earlier in his father turning down the opportunity to go fight. I think that has always stuck with Teddy, even into the late 1800s. In 1898, as we talked about in the previous episode, the United States is going to go into a war. And this is a big war, historically speaking. At the time, we weren't really sure what was going on. We had the USS Maine that was sunk in between Cuba and Florida. We blamed the Spanish. U.S. propaganda hit the newspapers, blaming the Spanish. Even Teddy Roosevelt himself, as Assistant U.S. Navy Secretary, blamed and was quoted as blaming the Spanish. And so we go to war with Spain, later finding out that Spain did not sink the USS Maine, that it was an electrical fire, but it was too late. Jingoism had gotten to a point where all we could see was blood. And the United States easily defeats the Spanish. But we need to talk about Teddy's role in the Spanish-American War. Because this is where Teddy's aura, the narrative that Teddy Roosevelt loves to create for himself, begins. Because Teddy is going to resign his post as U.S. Navy Secretary, Assistant U.S. Navy Secretary in the McKinley administration, so that he can go enlist and fight. But he's not just going to go enlist. He's going to go start his own group to go fight so that he can lead this group into battle. Historically, we know these guys as TR's Rough Riders. And this is a group of rough individuals. They are not professional soldiers by any stretch of the imagination. Many of them are cowboys. Many of them have been on the run as outlaws. So for Teddy to lead this group and to do so effectively speaks volumes at how Teddy relates to everybody. And he's one of those figures that is going to draw a lot of enemies. But he has an infectious personality. The most famous battle that the Rough Riders will be involved in is the battle at San Juan Hill. Teddy will earn medals of honor for that. When he returns home, he's going to make sure that if you haven't heard about my success in the Spanish-American War, especially at the battle at San Juan Hill, he was going to let you know about it. And what we see after the war ends and he returns home is that he's no longer being considered a man working his way up the New York politics ladder. He's already the U.S. Navy Assistant Secretary. There are people now kind of hinting that someday, maybe, he could become the President of the United States. But there's a problem. You see, the problem for Teddy is that the party bosses hate him. The Republican Party bosses want no part of Teddy Roosevelt. He won't listen to them. And for decades upon decades, party bosses have had full control over both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, respectively. What they said went. You have to also understand, when senators are elected during this era, the 17th Amendment hasn't been passed yet. So there is no direct election of senators. So the American people elect a state legislature, and then what the party bosses do is they tell the state legislature who they want them to elect as president of the United States. So they have their hands in every branch of the government at both the state level and even, yes, at the federal level. And the party bosses want to get rid of Teddy once and for all. Now, publicly, they will play the part. Publicly, they will praise Teddy and they will tell everybody that Teddy's doing a great job, but publicly, they are scheming on how to get rid of him once and for all, and they finally, in their minds, come up with the perfect plan. In 1900, William McKinley will be up for re-election. During his first term, McKinley lost his vice president because of a heart attack. He died because of a heart attack. So the Republican Party now has to decide who to put on the ticket with McKinley. And the Republican Party bosses say, "We've got our guy. Let's give him Teddy." Now, you may be asking yourself, how would that end Teddy's political career? Being a vice president, that seems like that would be a good spot to be. It's kind of the next step. You're next in line. But we're talking about 1900. We have had 25 presidents to this point. McKinley is the 25th. There has never to this point, through 25 presidents, been a vice president, serve as a vice president, and then go win his own term. It has never happened. We've had presidents that have had to step into the office, and we just had that happen not too long ago in recent history when Teddy was a little boy. And that was when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated and Andrew Johnson had to take over. We've seen John Tyler take over for William Henry Harrison. We've seen Millard Fillmore take over for Zachary Taylor. So we've seen it. It's not that it hasn't happened that way, but no vice president has ever finished serving as vice president and then gone on to win his own term. So in their minds, we'll send him away. The vice presidency at this time is just a ceremonial send-off. Okay, goodbye, Mr. Roosevelt. Go enjoy your 4 years in Washington, D.C. as the vice president. You're not going to get to do anything. And then when those 4 years are up and McKinley is done, you too are as well. The plan goes to the convention, and Teddy is furious. Teddy has openly, and even says it at the convention, "I do not want this nomination." They take it to vote. Now you have to understand how the convention works. All the delegates vote. There was only one nay, meaning one no vote. Guess who it was from? Teddy Roosevelt. He didn't want it. But it was an overwhelming vote for him to be added to the ticket because the party bosses run the show. And so in goes Teddy Roosevelt onto the ticket of William McKinley. Now, William McKinley is very popular going into 1900 because of the success as a wartime president in the Spanish-American War. He wins convincingly. And it's really funny because in 1900, and really 1896 and 1900, you see big business play a role in this. Guys like Rockefeller and Carnegie, Morgan, they're all afraid that their business interests are going to be jeopardized if the Democrats and William McKinley, I mean, excuse me, William Jennings Bryan get elected. The ironic, excuse me, I cannot talk right now. The ironic part of this is Teddy is very anti-monopoly. He believes in breaking up the trusts. But they're not concerned about Teddy Roosevelt because he, in their minds, he is so far away from the presidency as a vice president. They have nothing to worry about. However, shortly into William McKinley's second term, he is going to go deliver a speech in Buffalo, New York. And at this speech, he's going to be talking about commercial reciprocity, which is his economic plan to do more business with other nations, so that they in turn will do more business with us. This is all a part of that open door policy that we're going to see with John Hay and China. So it's a very important speech. He's going to give this speech in front of a bunch of Republican supporters. So, you know, they're cheering about every two or three sentences. You know how that all plays out if you've seen them on TV. Well, the speech ends. It was a success for McKinley, and McKinley is shaking hands one by one. And off in the distance, he sees a gentleman, like we talked about in last episode, and that gentleman had a gun wrapped in his cast, pretending to have a broken arm, and shoots McKinley. They tackle the man, and they move McKinley as quickly as they can to the hospital. Now, McKinley will survive for a little bit, and they actually think that he's going to survive for good. Like, they think he's going to, you know, come out of this thing completely. But the doctors notice that he is has an infection because of the wound, which got most people back then anyways. You think back to the Civil War, most soldiers died from infection as opposed to the wound itself. And gangrene is going to end up getting McKinley, who will survive for several weeks before finally passing. When Teddy finds out about the passing of McKinley, he's actually on a hiking trip. That just goes to show you Teddy's love for the outdoors. And they say, "Mr. President, it's time for you to go back to Washington. You're now the President of the United States." Teddy Roosevelt, upon returning to Washington and taking the oath of office, will become the youngest president in American history at this point, at the age of 42. 42 years old. You have to be 35 to be eligible. He is a very young man. And I say that because I'm 36, so I want to pretend that I'm still young. But 42 is very young to be the leader of the United States, a nation that has just moved on to the global stage as a world power after their victory against the Spanish. And one of my favorite stories to talk about is kind of just how cool it is that he became president. There's a photo out there that I would encourage you, after listening to this podcast or while you're listening to the podcast, that you would go and look at. It's such a cool photo. And going back to 1865, after Abraham Lincoln is assassinated, the country is devastated. And I should say the northern part of the country is devastated. And they want to see their president one last time. And so they will take the president's body to different major cities across the north. And as this thing goes on, the president's body is being embalmed constantly, and his body is starting to kind of to rot. And they're afraid that this has to be the last stop. And the last stop just so happens to be in New York City, so that patrons there can pay their last respects to their fallen president. And there's this really, really cool photo. And again, please go look this up. The president's body is being wheeled through the streets of New York City. The sidewalks are completely packed with New Yorkers. Completely packed. Shoulder to shoulder. Soldiers are marching. Soldiers are riding on horseback alongside the carriage which is carrying Lincoln's dead body. And then at the top left of that photo, there's a building. And I can't remember how many stories it is exactly, because I don't have it in front of me right now, but somewhere around the third floor, there is an open window. And looking out that open window are two young kids. Now, one of those children is little Teddy Roosevelt. And he's looking out the window at the fallen president. He's so young, he probably doesn't fully understand the magnitude of what is going on. But how cool is it that he is seeing the 16th president of the United States wheeled through the streets, people adoring him, never once as a little boy thinking that he would become the 26th president of the United States of America. I just love that story. Now, there's a lot of debate as who the second person is. The reason we know it was Teddy was able to confirm it, and others have confirmed it, because that was his grandfather's building. But the second person in that window, some believe it was his brother, Elliot. Some believe that it was a childhood friend who would become his second wife after his wife Alice died, and that is Edith. We aren't really sure because we have conflicting reports on that throughout history. But how cool is it that Teddy Roosevelt, as a little bitty child, was able to see that and that moment to be captured forever. Teddy Roosevelt becomes the 26th president of the United States. Well, that's going to conclude part one of our episode on Teddy Roosevelt. We will be getting going on part two here quickly. It's just so hard to condense everything with Teddy into a 30-minute podcast, and we're trying to keep these at 30 minutes if we can. We went a little over today, but I hope that you've enjoyed this podcast, and be looking out for part two on Teddy Roosevelt. We'll talk about his administration. We'll talk about the rise of American expansionism and imperialism. We'll talk about big stick diplomacy. We'll talk about a lot of things that went on during this progressive era president's administration. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.